Hello and welcome to the CISS podcast. This is the Point series by China Forum. In this series, we will have one-on-one discussions with top-level officials, diplomats, well-known entrepreneurs, academics, and media experts from both China and abroad to hear their fresh insights on important global issues.
Welcome to the CISS podcast. I'm your host, Sun Chenghao, fellow with CISS Tsinghua University, and today we are honored to have Professor Zhang Feng as our guest. Professor Zhang is a non-resident senior fellow at CISS Tsinghua, and his extensive research spans Chinese foreign policy, international relations theory, and East Asian security dynamics. Currently at the Po Tsai China Center as a visiting scholar, Professor Zhang is working on a new book project on China-US competition and compromise in Asian security. We are very excited to dive into this conversation and hear Professor Zhang's perspectives on China-US relations, the strategic balance in Asia, and the role of historical insights in modern policy. Welcome, Professor Zhang.
My pleasure. Thank you.
To begin with, since both of us now are visiting scholars here in Yale Law School's Po Tsai China Center, could you please share some of your experience and feelings here? And what do you find are the most interesting or important developments in China-US relations this year?
Right. So I've been based at the Po Tsai China Center as a visiting scholar since earlier this year. I think this is a wonderful policy-oriented research center. I think it's one of the leading think tanks on China research in the United States. And one of the things that's really unique about this center is that it's based in a leading university. And moreover, it is housed within what is widely regarded as the top law school, not just in the U.S., but also in the world, and that is Yale Law School. So you will have access to wonderful intellectual resources while being based here. And you have lots of opportunities to exchange ideas with colleagues in the center and also with academics across Yale University. And if you are adventurous enough, you could go out to nearby cities, New York, Boston, and other places, Washington, D.C., of course, to meet people, to share ideas with people. So it's a great place to study U.S.-China relations. So shortly after I arrived here early this year, one of the things I discovered is the diversity of views regarding China policy from America's China watchers and the American strategic community more broadly. We know it's often said that Washington has formed a bipartisan consensus on China policy. It's said that strategic competition has replaced engagement as the dominant approach toward China. That's true at the political level, but this consensus is shallow. By that, I mean that it does not rest on a solid intellectual foundation. The so-called consensus on strategic competition is different, for example, from the consensus on containment of the Soviet Union during the early Cold War years. During the early Cold War, George Kennan, as we know, made an intellectual case for containment, and it was very influential and appealing across the U.S. policy community. Now, various people, as we know, have tried to mimic Kennan and write strategic doctrines on China. I remember in 2021, the Atlantic Council produced a report titled The Longer Telegram Toward a New American-China Strategy. But the intellectual quality of the report pales in comparison with Kennan's original long telegram. So I think America's intellectual debate on China policy is still ongoing. That, I suppose, is because strategic competition is an unsatisfactory framework for U.S.-China relations going forward. And the U.S. is still searching for a more durable strategy that can appeal to broad segments of its policy community.
Yeah, thank you very much. I also agree with your most of your points, especially on the diversity of views of the U.S., maybe the scholars or think tanks analysts on the so-called debates on the future China policies. So my question is, what do you think are the main points of debate you have mentioned among those American analysts?
There are various points of contention. A long-standing one is what kind of challenge or what kind of threat China poses to the U.S. A lot of people, especially politicians, they believe that China wants to overtake the U.S. as the world's dominant power. But then, as we know, many other people disagree. A second question that has been the focus of the past 2 years is whether China's power has reached its peak or is still growing pace. And then there is the question of whether the U.S. and China are engaged in a new Cold War. On this question, opinions are polarized, but it is interesting to note that many distinguished Cold War historians question the Cold War analogy. Some point to European politics prior to World War I as being more relevant. So a good example is this local example is Professor Arnie Westad of Yale University here. So he's skeptical of the Cold War analogy, and he has recently warned in a foreign affairs essay that there is a danger of the U.S. and China sleepwalking into war, just like the European powers did before World War I. But I must say that the most interesting debate from the middle of this year is whether the U.S. should have a so-called theory of victory in its competition with China. This debate, as we know, was spurred by an essay published in Foreign Affairs written by two key Republican hawks on China, Matt Pottinger and Mike Gallagher. They argue that the U.S. should adopt a Cold War-style containment policy toward China. And in fact, they are calling for, you know, some kind of regime change from within China. And although they stop short of advertising the U.S. to actively promote regime change, they believe an effective U.S. strategy should lead to some form of regime collapse.
Yeah, I also read the article you have mentioned published in Foreign Affairs by the two authors on the theory of victory, which they believe that the U.S. should win the competition instead of managing the competition. I think that is a very interesting article. And so, according to your observation, what has been the response to this kind of view?
So, that's an important article, and it has triggered a huge debate and a lot of backlashes from senior scholars and analysts here in the U.S. And the Foreign Affairs subsequently published an exchange featuring responses from several prominent scholars. And more recently, CSIS has published a long report composed of 23 essays by leading scholars, analysts, and former policymakers. The authors are mostly based in the U.S., but a few are from Europe and Asia. Many of these essays are critical of Pottinger and Gallagher, but I also note that some, at least implicitly, share the assumption that competition, the U.S. competition with China, will ultimately be resolved through changes in Chinese power or the way China is governed. On this report, I think this is an important report, and Chinese scholars and analysts and policymakers should take it seriously. I think it reveals the major assumptions, along with the fourth lines of opinions behind the U.S. debate on China policy. And the essays by non-U.S. contributors are also very variable. But I think it's a pity that the report doesn't include any contribution from Chinese scholars. The current debate is a debate among people in the U.S. and the U.S. allied countries. So there should be a further debate, or in fact, a series of debates on U.S.-China competition between U.S. analysts and Chinese analysts, and preferably with comments from people based in other countries.
Yes, I think maybe 3 weeks ago when we first know that CSIS will release this kind of report, they told us they might include some Chinese scholars' arguments in the report, but I don't know why they didn't have that. I agree with you that they should also include more Chinese scholars or scholars from other countries to have their views shared in these kind of reports. So what's your view of this kind of debate, and what has it got right and what has it got wrong?
So I'm not surprised by this debate. More debate is better than less debate. I would be worried if there's no debate on China policy inside the U.S., because that would mean everyone jumps on the bandwagon of the bipartisan, hawkish, and yet superficial position of strategic competition with China. And I think debates are also necessary because the U.S. strategic shift from engagement to competition has been very abrupt. And it was really ushered in by the disruptive Trump administration. I think it's fair to say that even if Trump had not been elected in 2016, the U.S.-China relationship would still have deteriorated But the process could have been more gradual and less painful. Anyway, the point is that the abrupt shift in U.S. strategy toward China means that the resulting strategy, if it can be called a strategy, is not well thought out and needs a lot of work to be durable over the long term. So any debate on the merit of that strategy is welcome. Nevertheless, I do see one glaring omission in the current debate. And that is that nearly all the participants have taken competition between China and the U.S. for granted without interrogating the nature of competition. They all seem to think that strategic competition between the two countries is a given without giving much thought to what kind of competition might be worth pursuing and what kind of competition should be avoided. So part of my current research explores this question. I try to distinguish different kinds of competition and suggest what positive or healthy competition between the U.S. and China might look like.
Yeah, that is very interesting, especially about the definition of competition. What kind of competition should be avoided? So could you please tell us more about your research in this area?
Sure. So my starting point is the different intellectual sources of our conceptions of competition. The American conception of competition is very much rooted in the Western tradition, especially Enlightenment thought. So I ask this question. What would a tradition from China, say Confucianism, tell us about great power competition between the U.S. and China? So try to imagine Confucius, Kongzi, you know, the ancient Chinese philosopher, observing today's tense relationship between the U.S. and China. What advice might he offer? I think policymakers would do well to consider a Confucian approach, which is radically different from the American-style strategic competition, but also surprisingly relevant to today's geopolitical competition. Confucius would not advocate a zero-sum struggle. He would, I think, propose something like exemplary competition. In Chinese, that would be 君子之争, you know, exemplary competition that could transform rivalry into a force for mutual growth and global stability.
Yeah, it's very interesting about the definition of exemplary competition, because the U.S. believed it should be a kind of responsible competition. So what does Confucius mean by exemplary competition?
So let me give you a quick example. The ancient Chinese practice of archery, that's 射艺, archery. Confucius saw this as a model of virtuous competition. So what happened in the archery competition is that the archers, they strived for excellence, not by obstructing their opponents, but by perfecting their own skill and character. And as you can imagine, in an archery competition, they competed in parallel. Each of the competitors aimed at their own targets. And at the same time, they adhered to elaborate rituals. In Chinese, that's li or li yi. Rituals that foster the mutual respect and self-improvement. So imagine if the U.S. and China approach their rivalry in a similar spirit. Instead of seeking to undermine each other's technological progress, for example, they could compete to develop the most innovative clean energy solutions. Rather than engaging in tit-for-tat trade restrictions, they could strive to create the most resilient and equitable economic models. So I think this form of exemplary competition, 君子之争, would channel the two countries' rivalry into a force for global good. It will require new diplomatic rituals. In Chinese, we could probably say, you know, 新的外交礼仪, new diplomatic rituals. And norms are also important to manage the interactions, you know, a bit like the ceremonial etiquette of archery contexts. Now, I acknowledge that this may seem idealistic in today's charged geopolitical climate, but I think it offers a constructive alternative to the current trajectory of U.S.-China relations. And an important job of us as scholars and analysts is to think about such alternatives, even if they are not fully realizable at the present.
Yeah, my American colleagues often tell me that the word competition is neutral in English, and they frequently compare US-China competition to NBA games. However, I don't quite agree with this view. I believe that competition between major powers is fundamentally different from a sports event. So what do you think explains the contrast between the American and Confucian conceptions of competition?
Right. So to answer this question, we need to explore the different worldviews and intellectual underpinnings of these conceptions. We need to go deeper intellectually. I think this contrast is not merely a difference in tactics or goals. It reflects a fundamental divergence in how each culture, well, I need to be a bit careful here, you know, we don't want to overgeneralize, but I think there are important differences between this particular American view of competition and the Confucian conception of competition. I think at the heart of the divergence lies two different worldviews. One is the individualistic tradition that underpins Western, particularly American thought. And the other is the relational worldview central to Confucian philosophy. So the American view of competition stems from a long tradition of individualism. In this view, competition is about different parties, different competitors pursuing their own goals. And they measure success usually by how much they gain compared to others. So the Biden administration's strategy of competition or managed competition or responsible competition, whatever terms they use, is rooted in this individualistic foundation. And turning to the Confucian tradition, and you can say that this tradition sees individuals and nations not as isolated entities, but as deeply interconnected. And in the Confucian conception, competition is not just about pursuing relative advantage. It is a process of mutual elevation, and this mutual elevation occurs within a web of relationships. So the goal is not merely to win, but to improve oneself, and even to improve one's competitors so as to strengthen the social fabric. So if we apply this perspective to international relations, the Confucian conception would suggest a very different approach to competition than the prevailing U.S. strategy. So instead of seeking, say, relative gains or zero-sum advantages, it would emphasize maintaining the overall health of the relationship. And competition would be seen not as an end in itself, but as a means of mutual improvement and the cultivation of global harmony.
Okay, this is very fascinating. And you also mentioned that one problem in the current American debate about China policy is inadequate interrogation of the concept of competition. So how would you assess this debate from the perspective of your research on Confucian conception of competition?
Right, so from a Confucian perspective, if we go back to the debate triggered by the article of Pottinger and Gallagher, in fact, if you look at this debate closely, both the hawks and the more moderate voices are inadequate from a Confucian perspective because they share an individualistic assumption that emphasizes relative gains over the long-term health of U.S.-China relations and the broader global order. So Pottinger and Gallagher's view, as we know, they assume that the U.S. victory would necessarily mean China's defeat. This is a perspective that Confucius would likely view as both morally questionable and strategically unwise. And turning to the moderates. So the moderates in this debate, they rightly highlight the risks of this approach. But many of them still focus on securing a competitive advantage for the U.S. So they in fact agree with the hawks that international relations are primarily about gaining relative advantage rather than fostering mutual growth and improvement. So in this basic sense, they are all realists in the post-war American tradition. I would say that from a Confucian perspective, the entire framing of this debate is misguided. Confucius would likely urge a very different conception of winning in the context of U.S.-China competition. He would probably say that true victory in an exemplary competition between the U.S. and China would involve both countries improving themselves and excelling in their respective strengths while also maintaining a peaceful and cooperative relationship. So the goal would not be to defeat the other side or force a change in its political system, but to achieve the best possible version of oneself. So for the U.S., for example, this might mean focusing on reinvigorating its democratic institutions, investing in education and infrastructure, and addressing social inequalities and so on. And for China, this could involve improving governance, addressing environmental challenges, and balancing economic growth with social stability. So the basic point about the Confucian conception of competition is that it would suggest that both countries would be winning by becoming better versions of themselves, not by diminishing the other side.
This is normatively very appealing, but I can imagine critics say it might be too idealistic or even naive in the face of so-called severe geopolitical competition between the U.S. and China. So how would you respond to this sort of criticism?
Yeah, that's a very fair question. I have two quick points. Well, first of all, this Confucian perspective does not ignore the real differences and tensions between the U.S. and China. What it does is to suggest a way to channel these competitive impulses productively. And the second point is that the current confrontational approach has not really effectively addressed the underlying issues between the two countries. And the confrontational approach might have been counterproductive. It would make geopolitical competition between the two countries more dangerous, and it would prevent them from cooperating on critical issues that would affect the future of humanity, such as climate change, pandemics, and AI regulation.
Okay, so can you give us an example of how your Confucian approach might contribute to positive competition between China and the U.S.?
Sure. Let's take an example of technological competition. As we know, since October 2022, the Biden administration has imposed sweeping restrictions on the sale of advanced semiconductors and chip-making equipment to China. And its goal is very clearly to slow China's technological advancement. You can probably argue that from the American perspective, this approach is driven by legitimate national security concerns. But you cannot deny that this approach has several unintended consequences, not all very good for the U.S. For example, this approach has accelerated China's efforts to achieve technological self-sufficiency. It has disrupted global supply chains and innovation ecosystems. It has undermined U.S. industrial and technological leadership. And perhaps most concerning, it has created an atmosphere of mistrust that hinders cooperation on shared global challenges like climate change and public health. So a Confucian approach to technological competition would emphasize different principles. It will begin with acknowledging the vast majority of high-tech applications are for civilian use, and there are only a small subset of technologies that have direct military applications. So it would advocate a more precise delineation between military and civilian technologies to the extent possible. And it would avoid the tendency to treat all dual-use technologies as potentially militarily significant. And central to this Confucian approach is the distinction between clear military technology competition and fair economic competition. For the core national security technologies, it would acknowledge the legitimacy of using export control regimes. But for areas of pure economic competition, where the U.S. might simply be falling behind, the focus would be on ensuring fairness of competition rather than imposing restrictions. But I think most importantly, a Confucian approach would redefine how success is measured in technological competition. So rather than focusing solely on one country's relative position, it would consider how technological advancement benefits humanity as a whole. And this, I must point out, is a perspective largely absent from the current U.S. policy discussions. And this principle could guide decisions about which technologies to develop and how to apply them. And it could potentially steer innovation towards areas with clear societal benefits.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today, and it's been a truly fascinating discussion, especially hearing your unique perspectives on the current state of China-US relations and your research on the Confucian conception of competition. I believe our listeners will have a lot to take away from this conversation and how it might offer a more constructive framework for thinking about international relations. As we wrap up, I am reminded of how important it is to engage in these kinds of thoughtful discussions, especially during times of geopolitical tension, and your views on the need to rethink competition, not just as a zero-sum game, but as something that can drive mutual growth, mutual improvement, are thought-provoking. Thank you again for joining us today, and we wish you continued success in your research and look forward to seeing how these ideas continue to evolve and contribute to the broader discussion or debate on China-US relations.
Thank you very much, Shen Hao. Thank you.
Thank you.